Hi there, and welcome to the pilot episode of the reboot. Pilot of a reboot. I think that's a thing. For the Horseshoes and Hand Grenades podcast. I am your host, Zach Johnson, local Indiana radio personality, and I am joined by the real star of the show, the expert analyst, the Colts insider himself, CNHI Sports Indiana's Mr. George Brimmer. Hello, George.
Hey, Zach, how's it going? Another boring reboot. There's no original ideas left now. We just have to recycle the same thing over and over. No, I mean, it's been 3 years since last time we did a pod. Life kind of got in the way. And I'm really excited. You know, I think it's a great way to kind of connect with the fan base. And I'm very excited about getting back into it. And especially this week, we are literally, as we're talking, hours away from the start of the NFL draft.
Yeah, we, you know, you and I, we've been talking about this for a bit, about the idea of bringing this back. But we kind of kept it low key because we didn't want to get people excited if we weren't going to be able to put this out. But earlier today, you put out the call on Twitter for questions. We're going to get to a Twitter Q&A later. And the response has been there have been quite a few people just simply saying, not even asking questions, just saying, man, glad it's back. Glad you're bringing back Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. So hopefully I do a decent job as the MC, as the host of this thing, because a very difficult job trying to fill in for Heather. But I'm going to do my best. And as you said, George, we are on the cusp of one of the biggest events of the football calendar outside of any actual games being played. And that is the NFL draft. Just you have had the opportunity to cover quite a few drafts through the years. So let's just talk in general. What is it like on your end of things covering draft? Because it's one thing for us fans, you know, sitting at home, watching the picks coming in and everything. What's it like on your side of the coin as a beat writer sitting there and getting to actually cover the draft?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, this whole week is chaotic because it's lying season in the NFL to the nth degree. I mean, during this time, you can't really trust anything you hear. Everybody's trying to throw stuff out there to drive guys down the board. Anonymous sources are coming out of the woodwork this time of year. You know, this player can't do this. This player said something bad about someone's mama. It doesn't matter. They'll find anything this time of year to push a guy down, all in an attempt so that you can get the best value for your guys. The agents are guilty of this as anyone. You know, they'll spread things about other people's clients. I think that's the hardest part. The other thing that I really, this time of year in free agency, that I can't stand is the parody accounts on Twitter, because invariably somebody falls for it every single year. And they're smart about it. I mean, that's the thing, is it's not just wild accusations. It's not like Patrick Mahomes is traded for the Jets for a 7th round pick. It's something that's been discussed. It's something that's plausible.
Right.
And people will jump on this and run with it. I've seen, you know, bunches of people get hit by that. So, you know, you have to, if you don't have it from a source, don't use it yourself, because you're going to end up in a bad spot. You don't want to do that. But on draft day itself, it's funny because it's almost like it's one of these things where the whole lead up to it is this chaotic storm of activity, and you're trying to glean whatever you can from what the team has said publicly, what you're hearing privately, your own assessment of what the needs are on the roster, what the strengths are in the draft. You're doing all those things, and you finally get to draft day, and it's almost a letdown on our end, because now you're going to go down like Thursday for all intents and purposes, unless they do something, you know, Jim Irsay's on Twitter teasing, who knows?
I was going to say, we'll get to that.
We'll see. But there's a good chance on Thursday, I'm just going to sit down at the Indiana Farm Bureau Football Center and watch the draft on TV like everybody else. And the night will pass and we'll just, you know, get up Friday and do it all over again. So it's kind of funny. I think you have all this activity leading up to it. But even on Friday, if they make the picks, it's a lot of hurry up and wait. Once that pick's made, we're right back into chaos. There's going to be a Zoom call. You're going to, you know, get the first chance to talk to the guy, and you want to try to learn as much about that player as you can in a short amount of time. And then, you know, once the round's over, the day's over, you can go and talk with Coach Reich and with Chris Ballard, and they usually enlighten you a little bit more. But I think that's one of the fun parts about it. You do as much work as you can ahead of time, so you know as many of these prospects as well as you can. But you're always learning. Like, I think that's the most fun part for me about covering the draft. When they sign a free agent, it's that way too. But a lot of times, you have some idea, you've seen him play in the NFL, or, you know, a real quick Google search will get you what you need. With these draft picks, especially on Saturday, you know, you might not have heard from the school they come. Like, one of my favorite ones was EJ Speed. He's at Tarleton State, and I'm trying to figure out where that is, Texas, by the way. And, you know, you're looking it up. He's played 19 different positions. Well, where do they want him to play? You know, eventually we find out it's linebacker. But to me, that's a fun part of it because it's like this little mystery that unfolds in real time with every pick, and you're trying to figure out. Last year it was Dio Odengbo. Not that we didn't know who he was, but what are they doing? They just took a defensive lineman. How are you taking another one? Isn't he hurt? Those questions get answered. This starts coming through. It's really like real-time craziness, and that part of it is probably my favorite part.
So let's get into discussion about this year's draft. Like you said, George, as we're recording this on Wednesday night, we are just mere hours away from the draft kicking off. And when you look at the Indianapolis Colts roster coming into draft day, where do you see the biggest needs for the Colts? What do you think they need to use their draft picks on? Not necessarily asking to start naming names for potential picks. We'll maybe get to that later. But just in general, where do you think the Colts need to address issues on the roster using these draft picks?
I think the flashing neon sign right now is wide receiver. You know, I think that's the one that everybody's aware of. I think the Colts have been trying to do their best to play that down a little bit because you don't want to be in a position where the whole rest of the league knows what you're going to do. But I think there's a really good chance that it's going to be a wide receiver. Again, the strength of this draft is at that position. The need is real at that position for the Colts. That one just makes all the sense in the world. But we also know from, you know, his history here, Chris Ballard's not going to be a slave to need. It may well line up because of the strength at that position and because of the need that it works out that's the pick at 42. But he's going to take the best player available. And I think there are other needs. I think offensive tackle is the next one that comes to mind. I know they had a veteran, Dennis Kelly, in this week who would kind of be that swing tackle that they need. But I think if there's a tackle that they love, you wouldn't pass him up right now. You have a chance to be a starter on this team. I think cornerback is still in play to the extent that I know they just signed Stephon Gilmore. You feel really good about Kenny Moore. I think they like the competition there with Faison and Isaiah Rogers for that number three spot. But you at 42, you could potentially land a corner who could compete for that number three role. And again, I think at that spot, if a guy's going to start or has a good chance to start, and a third corner is a starter in today's league, it's going to be in play. Not so much at 42. Well, and then tight end, I think, is the other one at 42 that could come into play. Again, just going with that whole idea of the passing game and adding weapons, whether it's a receiver, whether it's a tight end, I think those are positions that they're going to be near the top of the board. I think as they go through the day, interior depth on the defensive line, I think, is something that they need, and they've talked about that. The same with the offensive line. If they are able to sign Dennis Kelly, then maybe you're just looking at interior depth on the offensive line because you have Will Fries coming in the second year. They feel good about him. But Danny Penner, who's done such a great job playing all three of those slots in the middle of the offensive line, is probably going to be the starting right guard if all goes well. So you need to replace him, and I think they'll look at that. The other one that might not come right to the top of everybody's head is linebacker, because you look at that and you've got Darius Leonard, you've got Bobby Okereke, you've got Zaire Franklin, EJ Speed's a nice player in that mix as well. I assume Jordan Glasgow is going to make the team again as a special teams guy, as he has. And they just brought in Brandon King for that similar kind of role, special teams depth. But when we look again at the history of what Chris Ballard's done, when Anthony Walker was here, they drafted Bobby Okereke without any second thoughts, and they played together for 2 years before Okereke took it over last year. Okereke's in the last year of his deal. So it would not surprise me if they got an athletic linebacker who fits that mold. We've seen them do it with Leonard, with Okereke, with EJ Speed. If they've got a guy out there like that, I think on Saturday that would be something to keep an eye out for as well.
So you kind of alluded to it. Let's talk about it. Colts owner Jim Irsay tweeted out earlier today as we're recording this about how, you know, draft is about to start. Colts don't have any first round picks. ... Or will we? obviously, it's like you said, it's gamesmanship among the team officials and owners and coaches and GMs. Everybody's trying to kind of muddy the waters a little bit. But do you see a situation where maybe the Colts, you know, to address one of those needs, if there's a player out there that they think, okay, we really want this guy, do you see that being a move the Colts try to make where they try to maybe get into the first round somehow?
Yeah, you know, we talked about this a little bit at Arby's earlier today. We'll drop a name in there, see if we get anything. You know, that's how this works, right? Do some plugs and see where that goes. You know, we're all about that, just by the way. But no, I mean, seriously, I do think it's an interesting... I see maybe three scenarios where they might be tempted. The obvious one to me would be offensive tackle. I mean, that's such a premium position in this game. If there was maybe somebody falling and they felt like the cost was right, you could go up and get, like, in my mind, I'm thinking somebody like Trevor Penning, who might be in that 20-ish area, maybe even a little lower than that. Maybe you jump up, and if you feel like this guy... Now, Chris Ballard said last week when he talked to us, if you're going to do that, you have to have a belief, you have to have a projection that this guy's going to be a 10-year starter for you. You don't just go up and get a guy who's going to be similar to whoever you were going to pick at 42. So I don't know. That's why I can throw Trevor Penning's name out there. But I think when he's thinking of this, he's thinking Evan Neal. He's thinking Ike Ekwonu, the big, you know, the big guys who are kind of slam dunks. I do think if there's an offensive tackle that they love, if they see him in that kind of role, maybe Charles Cross would fit in that, you know, he's another guy I expect to go in the top 10 though. But you don't, this is going to be one thing about this. This is going to be one of the most unpredictable first rounds of all time. I mean, there are so many grades that are just right on top of each other in this draft. And I think the boards are going to vary so much from team to team. Somebody is going to fall on Thursday night that no one saw coming. And that's almost happens every year anyway. I think it's almost a guarantee this year. So I think a tackle, if that would happen with a tackle, I think you would want, they'd be tempted. I think the other scenario in my mind that might play out there is if this run on wide receiver gets to be egregious. If they, like I was saying earlier, if they have, say, four receivers on their list that they think that they like at 42 and three of them come off the board, now maybe you're looking at trying to get into the back of the first round and say, hey, this is the last guy. One of the things that Ballard does a lot, and he's talked about this a lot, they have groupings of players. And so once that grouping kind of hits a natural break or a cliff, however you want to refer to that, that's when you'll see him move up. That's why when they went up a couple of years ago to get Kari Willis, that's why. He was the last safety they had graded with a starter type of grade. And so they felt like if we don't move now, we're not getting a safety. If that would happen, you know, where they, and I doubt that would be that way with this position because I think the wide receiver group is so deep. But if they would have a grade situation where they just feel like there isn't going to be somebody there at 42 that they really feel comfortable with, at that point, you're either going to trade back, you know, and try to just pick up extra picks and grab somebody, or trade up and get that last guy on the list. And then the other one I think is a longer shot, but you can't rule it out because obviously they've been meeting with the quarterbacks. I mean, we know the Malik Willis thing was the strangest thing that happened all offseason to me. Them meeting with a guy who's probably going to go number eight in this draft or thereabouts. But they did. They also, you know, brought Sam Howell in for a visit, the North Carolina quarterback. They went to Cincinnati to work out Desmond Ridder. Perhaps they would trade up to get a quarterback, but I think that's one of the things that would just melt Twitter. I mean, if they, with the needs on this roster right now, if they trade up for a quarterback and give up any kind of assets to do that, and the guy's going to sit for 2 years, it definitely will be a fun night for those that like to watch the world burn.
So taking a look at what the Colts do have to deal with, what we know going into the draft they have, no first round picks. They gave those up as part of the deal to get Carson Wentz last year. So when you really think about it, the Colts' first round picks this year are going to the Washington Generals. Washington Commanders.
Well, the Eagles. The Eagles get that pick, unfortunately.
Well, I'm saying that what they got for them is going to
That's
Washington.
True. That's very true.
So the Colts' first draft pick isn't going to be until the second round. They get the 42nd overall pick. And that's the only pick they get in the second round. Then they get only one pick in the third round, 73rd. Both of those were from the Washington deal. And then you've got fourth round, the 122nd overall, two in the fifth, 159th, and 179th. That's a compensatory pick. And then they get one compensatory pick in the sixth round, 216th, seventh round, 239th overall from Philly as part of a deal with them. So when you really look at it overall, the Colts don't have very many draft picks this year. I mean, out of the, you know, hundreds of picks that get made, Colts get seven. And that says a few things. One, it says a lot about how Chris Ballard just gives them away in trades quite a bit. But it also means that the Colts are really going to have to maximize the return on these draft picks this year because they're going to get so few of them.
Yeah, I mean, you always look at that top 100. That's where it starts. And they've only got two picks, I think, in the top 100 this year, that second rounder and the third rounder. And that's, you can't rule out a trade back. You can never rule out a trade back when it comes to Chris Ballard. He does it just about every year at some point in the draft. And I think only having two top 100 picks, you might see it happen this year with one of those two, just to see if they can add some more value in there. The meat of this draft from everybody's kind of, you know, consensus is in that second through the fourth round. So those three picks right in there, if they could turn those into four or five, I think they would be pretty excited about that. But the flip side of it is there are some big needs, as we talked about, wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver. But the roster on the whole is not talent needy. And so I think that's one thing too. I think it's one of the reasons he was willing to give up a lot of picks in these trades, you know, going into this. They don't need a big infusion from the rookie class. I think those two in particular, the second and the third round, are those two top 100 picks. That's what you've got to nail. One of those needs to be a receiver. The other one probably needs to either be another receiver or a tight end or a tackle, and you've really got to hit those, or a corner, as we talked about earlier, because those are the picks that are going to end up being guys that contribute this year. After that, you're looking at more depth, and those are important too, because that comes around in a couple years. You look at Danny Penner, a fifth round pick a couple years ago, now filling in, likely to be the right guard, did a great job last year at center. You need those late round picks for that reason, and that's what you're looking for. But I feel like 42 and 73, that right there, they've got to get those right. And you've seen, if you've watched the With the Next Pick series that they do on YouTube, great job of the Colts in-house production company. Ballard has said it. We have to get it right. And they do. Because when you don't go big in free agency, and we know that's not their style, they made some big moves this year. You know, Stephon Gilmore is a big move. Mm-hmm. Trading for Yannick Ngakoue is a big move. Trading for Matt Ryan is a huge move.
Massive.
But when you don't, when you're not the Rams and you don't go crazy with it, you have to hit on those draft picks. That's the only way to get the talent in. And when you only got two in the top 100, you've got five top 100 picks. Hey, you can miss on a couple. You got two, you better nail those picks.
So you kind of got at it a little bit talking about coach or GM Chris Ballard's drafting style. Compared to some of the other GMs in the league, how does Ballard's approach handle to the draft compared to others based on what you know and have been told?
Yeah, you know, I think one thing that's interesting is New York Post did a study of the last 5 years. They do this every year. They look at the last 5 years of the draft, and I'm not sure exactly what all their criteria is, but they rank the teams 1 to 32, who's drafted the best, who's made the most with the picks that they had. And the Colts last year were fourth, which is pretty good. That included the last year of Ryan Grigson's reign. This year, when it's all 5 years, Chris Ballard, number one on the list, the number one drafting team in the NFL. And I think when you look at it, it's guys like Darius Leonard, Quentin Nelson, Braden Smith, Rocky Sin, who you turn into a Yannick Ngakoue, and Jonathan Taylor, he's pretty good. Michael Pittman, you know, they've nailed a lot of guys who are key components of this football team right now. Bobby Okereke, you know, we talked about him earlier. That is kind of his MO. You know, they're going to go out and they're going to get value. He's not worried, as we talked about earlier, he's not worried about the need. Now, need's going to break ties. Need's going to break near ties. You've got two prospects on the board and they're very close, their grades are very similar, you're going to take the one that's the need. But what he's talking about is if you, you know, if they get there at 42 and the 15th guy overall on their draft board is still there, you don't care what position he plays. You're going to go get him. The value there is greater than the need because you don't know what's going to happen down the road. Maybe you end up trading the guy you had there and get the need. He's always talking about year-round acquisitions. And I think when he says that, he's talking about Kenny Moore was a waiver claim. Pierre Desir, who played good football for this team, was a waiver claim. They brought in Matt Pryor last year around training camp in a trade. Those kind of things, that's why he feels confident in what they're doing. Why he feels like at 42 they could take a defensive end. If that's where it's at, you know, that would shock a lot of people, including me, but that's, they're going to follow their grades. They put that work in starting really after the draft last year all the way till now, and they're going to respect that. They're going to go by that. So that grade's going to be the ultimate determiner at the end of the day. Now, they don't go into that process blind. Just the fact that they didn't do much in free agency at the wide receiver market tells me there's a lot of wide receivers graded pretty right. well on their board. I mean, every move sets up another move, and everything is, you know, working off it. But I think like at the wide receiver position, because that's where we're going to be talking about. Right now, as we're on the eve of the draft, and unless something happens in the hours before this podcast comes out, the way this NFL offseason's gone, I don't discount that. It could definitely be the case. But as we're sitting here right now, T.Y. Hilton's still available. They're still talking with him. There's a chance he could come back. Julio Jones is still out there. I don't know what he's got left in the tank, but you know, I hear tell that he has a little bit of history with the new quarterback and that those two played well together down south somewhere. So I think that's just two guys on top of my head. And that you can do that for every position. You know, Dwayne Brown's still out there at left tackle. So how long does that last? I don't know. Is it something that, but the point is the draft isn't the end of the offseason. You know, whatever that roster looks like at the end of the day on Saturday is not necessarily what the roster looks like in September when they kick off. And Ballard understands that. And I think it's part of his draft philosophy. The biggest thing to him is, I think the biggest thing he said on Friday, and we've seen it, you know, throughout his career here, don't pass on a great player. And he used Reggie Wayne in particular. They needed defense in 2001, cornerback specifically. Everybody's waiting for them to take a corner. They take a skinny receiver out of Miami who didn't really produce until about the third year of his career. And now he's a two-time Hall of Fame finalist. And I don't think anybody can imagine Reggie Wayne playing for anybody other than the Colts. But that's the way the draft works. And that's Ballard's philosophy. Doesn't hit them all. There's no doubt about it. You know, no one bats 1,000 in this thing. But he's going to go after. He's going to stay true to those grades. He's going to go after value with every pick. And it's going to, I think it's going to be one of the most unpredictable drafts across the board we have seen in years. And that's what makes it fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun next week when we sit here and we get to break down and talk about all the picks and go over, you know, what do we think, if it was a good pick, if it was a bad pick. So you're definitely going to want to tune into next week's Horseshoes and Hand Grenades for that one. But George, it's time to put you in the hot seat.
Oh no.
And let's do some Q&A. What do you say?
Why not? So it's been 3 years. I'm warmed up.
We put it out on social media that we were doing Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, and we asked for some questions from the Twitterverse, and we did get a few questions. So let's go to it. Todd Holiday asks, if no tight end has been taken by pick 42, how tempted do you think the Colts will be to take McBride, whoever they have rated number one at the tight end position?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think everybody focuses on the wide receivers with good reason. I mean, everybody knows after Michael Pittman Jr., Ashton Doolin with 13 catches is your leading returning producer there. And, you know, you don't, that's not a situation anybody wants to be in. But the tight end's another important role. And, you know, obviously, if that guy can go out and stretch the field and make plays, you're going to take a good, hard look at that. I know it's kind of the cop-out answer, but it's true. It's going to depend on those grades. Again, if a tight end is the guy who's at the top of their draft board when they get to 42, they're not going to hesitate to do it. I think it's less likely. I still think, you know, if I have to put money down on a position, I'm going with wide receiver at 42 just because of what we've talked about throughout this entire podcast so far. But I don't think a tight end would be crazy at all. I think it, and especially in that scenario where every tight end is still on the board, which I don't think is an outlandish scenario. I don't know if it's the most likely outcome, but it's certainly a plausible outcome. And yeah, I mean, if you get your pick of any tight end and you feel like one of those guys can come in and have that sort of Rob Gronkowski type of impact, Jason Kelce impact, you're going to do that in a heartbeat.
Lawrence Stonger, hope I said your name correctly, says, it's likely the Colts will not draft a starting left tackle in the draft, but have a pressing need to shore up Ryan's blind side. Do you see them adding a Dwayne Brown or another legit starter to compete before training camp?
Yeah, you know, so we were just talking about that year-round kind of philosophy that Ballard has, and a lot of that's going to depend on how much money those guys are wanting at that point and how much money the Colts have left, because, you know, as much as they had at the beginning of the offseason, they've spent a lot of it, and they're going to spend some more this week on the draft. I think they're at around $11 million-ish, somewhere in that neighborhood. It's probably going to take about $6 million to sign the draft picks, give or take. So they're probably going to have about $5 million to play with. Now, you can do some things and move some things around. You could probably get that to $8, $9, $10 million if you needed to, you know, to go and sign somebody. One thing I'm not sure about that, and as it pertains to that position in particular, they seem pretty committed to giving Matt Pryor, as they said, first crack at this job. So I think it might be more likely that they do try to find somebody in the draft who they can develop, who can compete from that, than to bring somebody in who might be immediately the favorite to take the job.
Edrin Nate wants to know, with the recent veteran acquisitions of Ryan, Ngakoue, Gilmore, etc., is it starting to feel like the front office and coaching staff is viewing this roster as in a win-now mode?
Absolutely. I think they have the last couple of years. I mean, when you go out and you get Phillip Rivers, you do that because you feel like you're a quarterback away. You know, that team won 11 games and took a very good Buffalo team down to the final drive, you know, in the playoffs, and obviously didn't get it done. But that was a good football team, and I think they felt like they had a lot coming back last year. The way last season ended didn't sit well with anyone. The owner made that abundantly clear this offseason. And, you know, the players are still talking, man. DeForest Buckner today, as we're taping on Wednesday, said, you know, he should be over it. He feels like he's trying to put it behind him, but this one stings. You know, I mean, to lose that game the way they did, and for it to cost them a shot at the playoffs, I think it's what you're seeing. This team feels like they are loaded at a lot of spots. Wide receiver's not one of them, but everywhere else, this team has pretty much what they need to go and compete. And so, yeah, you go and you add guys like Yannick Ngakoue, who I think is underrated, by the way. I think that was one of the bigger moves of the offseason. And Stephon Gilmore and Matt Ryan, because you feel like you can win now. Absolutely, that's the sign of what's going on here.
Felipe Costa says, all the hype for us fans seems to be in taking a wide receiver with their first pick. If it isn't, though, what do you think is the most likely position to be targeted? So we kind of talked about how maybe they don't take somebody else besides a wide receiver. You know, maybe they do something other than a wide receiver. But what he wants to know is, like, what position do you think is most likely to go at that number 42 pick if it's not a wide receiver?
I mean, looking, the best I can do from the outside is looking at the strength of the draft, you know, where it's deep and what's likely to be available. And my thought would be offensive tackle. I mean, it's another big need. There's a couple guys out there. Bernard Ryman comes to mind in particular from Central Michigan. If he's there, I think he'd be very intriguing. He's got shorter arms, though, so it'll be interesting to see. Ballard's kind of shied away from that, so I don't know where he rests, you know, on their kind of spectrum there. But I do think, you know, offensive tackle, and then the other one is corner, just because there's a lot of really good corners in this draft, and I think there's some really athletic guys who might be available there. And as we talked about earlier, that's a position that you don't immediately come to mind if you're listing needs, but you could bring a guy in who could compete with Isaiah Rodgers, could compete with Brandon Faison to be a starter next year. I think tackle or corner would be, which means it'll be like a defensive lineman, but you know, that's I would say tackle or cornerback.
Ballard does tend to be a little bit unpredictable sometimes with his picks. One final Twitter question that we have here from Indy Source. Colts are once again relying on a rookie wide receiver for massive production immediately. MPJ delivered, but not in a large level in year one. Should we scratch off project type wide receivers as options at number 42 then?
Yeah, you know, I think that's going to be interesting because that's one of the things I've asked Ballard about that directly a couple times over the years. And he said he doesn't really take that into account when he's drafting. You know, because I always wonder, when you have a team like this, as we mentioned earlier, is in a win-now mode, do you want a guy who can contribute right away? And basically, he said, doesn't change. You know, it's about the grade. And so I think it depends. It's a case-by-case basis. I don't think it would be a blanket statement there. I don't think a guy would get scratched off just because it's going to take him a little bit longer. But again, I think as we were talking about in the need versus best player kind of category, if it's close, you're probably going to take the kid you think can help you win more this year. But I think they feel like there's a lot of different ways that these guys can contribute. So, no, you know, I think ultimately they won't shy away from it. But it's got to factor in. You know, again, if there's a tiebreaker, it's got to factor into the equation.
Well, that's going to do it for the Twitter Q&A. Of course, every week you can send your questions to George at GM Bremer on Twitter. Use the hashtag HSHG. I got it right the first time. Hashtag HSHG for horseshoes and hand grenades. And submit your Twitter questions and we'll get to them every week as we can. Like I said, we plan on doing this podcast almost every week. We're going to do a post-draft episode next week, and then probably our next one will be as we get ready to ramp up for like training camp, and then once that hits, we'll start doing it on a more regular basis. But these first 2 weeks, kind of like the pilot episodes, if you will, for the reboot of Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. I almost said our other podcast we do.
We're like those TV shows where you kind of get like a really short season, you know, right at the end of the spring, and then you get the full fall show. That's what we're trying to do now. A little teaser, a little taste.
I like that. I like that idea. So next week, we'll be back with another episode of Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, and we are going to be going over the draft. We'll review the draft. We'll talk about the picks the Colts made, any moves they may have made over the course of the week. It should be a fun one, so hopefully you tune in next week for the podcast. George, if people want to connect with you, where can they do so?
Yeah, you know, always hit me up on Twitter, at GM Bremer, and you can follow my stories at haroldbulletin.com.
And if you actually want to follow what I say on social media, it's mostly going to be about wrestling, not so much about football, but the occasional football slot, you know, thought slips through there. I am at Radio ZT, and we are George Bremer and Zach Johnson, and this has been Horseshoes and Hand Grenades.